We're so happy you're listening to this program, Health and Happiness, on Gallatin Valley's KGVM 95.9 and the internet, kgvm.org. Our program most often is devoted to mental health with support from the Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee. However, we have a variety of stories about interesting life in general. Tonight we have another very interesting interview. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. Dr. Suzanne will now introduce our program.
Good evening. Have you aspired to be a writer? To transport a reader, we all love to read a powerful story or see it on screen. But what's the actual process? Is it difficult? Sitting before a blank page can be daunting. Many of our greatest writers have shared how difficult it is to actually come by those brilliant passages that illuminate and intrigue readers. From childhood Hansel and Gretel to John Steinbeck, we enjoy the fruits of their labor. As one writer, Jean Fowler, said, "Oh, writing is easy. All you have to do is stare at a blank sheet of paper until drops of blood form on your forehead." Ernest Hemingway spoke of writing. He said, "Real seriousness in regard to writing is one of two absolute necessities. The other, unfortunately, is talent." Well, this evening, we have with us two such talented and successful writers. Among other things, one has written for the movies and another writes novels. They are here this evening to share how they approach the writing process. Elizabeth Wood is a filmmaker and writer who lives in New York City. Her first narrative film is called White Girl, which premiered at Sundance and can be watched on Netflix. She is now writing her next film, and Elizabeth, welcome, and she will introduce her guest. And one little aside here, in fact, we're proud to disclose that Elizabeth is our daughter. So we've been able to view the writing process firsthand, and we'll look forward to them sharing it with you. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you. The last time I was on, you didn't admit I was your daughter. So I guess I passed the test, and I will try to continue to do well for you, Mom and Dad. But I am so excited to have my friend Jindy Pomeroy on with us today. You said, I'm going to introduce her, but you said this show is usually about mental health. And I want you to know that talking about writing is largely talking about mental health. So I think we're perfect candidates. Jenny is trained as a classical singer and she's a voice teacher. But under the name Sonia Blake, she's a writer who published her debut novel, Under the Surface, which I absolutely adore, in 2020, and it's available on Amazon. And she's now working on her next novel while she's teaching music students. And we're going to begin, before we start talking, by showing an excerpt of Jenny's music. Jenny is an incredible musician. When I first met her, I was going to see her sing at, what was the cathedral where I saw you sing, actually, Jenny?
St. Bartholomew's Church in New York City.
Yes, Jenny has performed as a soprano soloist at Radio City Music Hall with, can you pronounce his name? Ennio Morricone, and with other premier ensembles, including the Calgary Philharmonic and Luminous Voices, whose 2020 album Sea Dreams was nominated as a Juno Award Classical Album of the Year. And the following excerpt is Jenny singing, will you pronounce it properly?
Yes. Adonna Belle Crudele by Barbara Strozzi, which I am singing with Grant Herod at Drew University.
And so please enjoy this beautiful song. Okay, that is just so gorgeous. That was so gorgeous.
Thank you.
That is stunning, Jenny. That is perfectly crystal joy right there. That is beautiful. And what a lovely voice you have. And thank you for sharing that bit of your hobby with us. I guess you could ask, is singing your main job or is writing your main job?
Yeah, well, you know, professionally, singing has been my main job. I did study music in college, and for most of my adult life, I've been working professionally as a singer and a voice teacher. And yeah. Writing, yes, and writing is kind of a newer thing that I have started to share publicly that I've been doing all my life and just starting to get into publishing and trying to share it publicly with other people.
And Jenny right now sounds very humble, and that's what I think I like about Jenny. But I am surrounded by writers. I am a writer by quote-unquote profession, and yet I have never in my life met someone who writes as much as Jenny. When I first met her, I did know her as a musician. I would go seeing her do her opera performances and her early music performances and in folk bands in downtown Manhattan and Brooklyn. And I knew her as a musician, but then one day her partner told me that every morning Jenny would dress in complete costume for her character and work on a novel. I believe it was a medieval novel. And I was so interested to hear this that I started to talk to Jenny about her books. Now, let's flash forward to the pandemic when we were all stuck at home for several years. Jenny in the woods of New Hampshire, where she lives with her husband and a toddler in a house that has a wood-burning stove, which she has to keep burning 24 hours a day in the colder months, and there are many colder months in New Hampshire, and me stuck out of the city against my will at a very nice ocean, but against my will nonetheless. Jenny and I rekindled our friendship in a new way over many years over an app called Marco Polo, which I'm not sure if anyone's familiar with it, but it's where you can send long video messages to each other. And we began discussing our writing process. And every day we would check in to encourage each other, to ask where we were in the story, to talk about things that were getting in the way, such as being mothers and our kids and life in general. And I found Jenny to be the richest resource of support and inspiration in my life. And so that's why I'm so excited to ask Jenny more about her writing process. You said you came to writing, it's something new to you, but Jenny, I know you as someone who's written now how many novels?
Well, I guess 15 that I have pretty much finished. Yeah.
15 novels. And when did you decide you wanted to be a writer? And how did you begin? Really? Well, childhood or later?
Yeah, I think it really began in childhood. And I feel like this maybe is something you and I have had a conversation about in our many Marco Polo chats that, you know, I think as a child, I wanted to, I don't know if you guys can hear that sound, sorry. As a child, I wanted to always play some kind of elaborate make-believe game. And I loved directing my friends in these elaborate make-believe worlds. It was something that I knew I loved doing, storytelling in any format. And I think I started writing them down when I was in middle school to entertain myself. My parents took me and my brother on a family vacation in Maine, and we rented a house on an island, and it was the only house on the entire island, 10 miles off the coast of Bar Harbor area. And I had no electricity, no TV, my Walkman batteries ran out, and I started writing. I started making up a story that was something I wanted to read. And I think that was where it began for me. This idea that I always felt a little unsatisfied, a little hungry for something other than whatever I could find out there, which I think is probably that way for all people, that we have this deep craving for some bespoke form of entertainment. And I think that's where the urge came from, just wanting to tell myself a story I wanted to read.
And you truly write things that I have never encountered on the page before. I hear a little bit of breathing. I just want to warn everyone on the call. Jenny's book, the first book I read of hers, Under the Surface, which again is available on Amazon. I've now bought it for every family member and friend I possibly can. The very unusual tale. Jenny, could you just give us a brief, I know I say mermaids and you could tell us what it's really about.
Yeah, it's about this woman who saves a man from drowning and finds out that she is a siren and he is a selkie, and he has been cursed by a witch and is enslaved to her. And it's a very fantastical kind of romping paranormal romance.
And I think the setting perhaps comes from your childhood, islands and the coast and the ocean, and it's all beautifully lyrically presented, Jenny.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I will tell you the truth. I wrote that story when I deeply, deeply missed that place. I was missing Maine. I was missing the coast. And I think, like, more than anything, really, missing that freedom that we have in childhood to just fully let our imagination fly, go wherever we want with it, not being held down by structure of school or societal expectations. I mean, I was, you know, literally stranded on an island with my parents and my brother. And I think that kind of feeling is something I've been chasing for. Yeah.
So, and now that we're parents, I do hope we can create moments like this for our children to hopefully discover some of that same creativity, because now we're so connected to the world with everyone's screens and the digital connections that it feels rarer and rarer to hear of that experience.
I agree, Elizabeth. I was just going to say it was all distraction being deleted that freed her up, this wonderful spirit of writing that Jenny has. And how surrounded, I was thinking, we all are with all of our technology. And so how big a part do you think that played for you, Jenny?
Do you mean how big a part the island experience played for
me?
Yes,
yes, the deprivation of all the distractions.
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think it was almost a signal of permission to fully dive in to the imaginary world. And I think as a child, that's an easy leap to make, easier than as an adult. And as adults, I know that's something we struggle with. And Elizabeth and I talk about this almost every day. We talk about it all the time. And it can be so hard when you're an adult, and especially as a mother. You always have a list at any moment of 5 things, at least, if not 20, you should be doing. But to really carve away time and to be able to give your subconscious and the creative parts of yourself this message that there is nothing more important to do right now than to play in your imaginary world, to find a thread of a story and just chase it for as long as you feel like it. That's something that's so hard to attain as an adult in today's world, but it is doable. And obviously, the fact that there is art at all out there is proof that it is doable for some of us.
Well, first of all, you're making me think someone needs to send me to an island right away and leave me there until I finish my next screenplay. And second of all, I would like to argue that you are better at it than most people. Jenny and I both have children to care for, but the difference is Jenny is also a gourmet cook and tending a fire and plowing the snow and chasing animals. And yet, every day, in the midst of this madness, you take hours out of your day with a kid there with you and continue to output work. And I feel like, how are you able? I often ask you, and I still don't quite understand how you're able to close yourself off from these immediate needs, from your family, from the physicality of a busy family household, and just write 20 pages a day. How do you do this, Jen?
This is a good question, and I'm glad you're asking it, because I think that it's something a lot of parents out there probably do ask and wonder. And I will say it's not always easy. I think that you're flattering me and you're making it sound better than it might be, but it's a struggle.
I think there are things that I do that really help give me a signal that it's okay to be creative. And one of them is having a playlist that I create for each book that I'm writing. And I mean, this could be anything, but what it is it's this auditory signal that sends me right into a world that I've already mentally created. It's like a smell, you know, it's a habitual thing. And for me, morning is my most kind of creative time, I think, because the day hasn't had a chance to catch up to me and grab hold of me. So I get my coffee and I stand, I don't write sitting, I stand up with my computer at like a standing desk in my living room with my coffee and my earbuds in. Or sometimes I just blast my music if I feel like I have to sort of be paying attention to what's going on in the room. But
can we just point out that when you're standing in your living room writing, you're also with a toddler?
Yeah, I am. I am also with a toddler. And before that was with an infant. And I mean, this is also something.
It mystifies me.
No, I mean, this kind of comes to independent play. And I'm a big fan of respectful parenting, and I really love Janet Lansbury, who has an amazing podcast called Unruffled. She encourages independent play from early infancy. And I think that's something that I really latched on to, is actually helping my own child develop his own deep and strong relationship with his inner world. And when he's engaged with his inner world, I'm free to engage with mine right next to him. And we're together. And we're both having a great time.
I love this about you. And I feel like, I don't know, you're a kind of sponge that absorbs. What's the word for someone that knows everything? What's that cool word? Autodidact? That's not it. Something like that. Whatever it is, you're it, Jenny. If it's parenting, if it's writing, if it's food, you're kind of, I just feel like you're my professor in life, who every day I check in with. You know, we'll have to do another show on parenting styles. But Jenny continues to write against all odds. While she wrote Under the Surface while very pregnant in Calgary, which isn't far from Bozeman, in the deep snowy mountains there, you continue to push out novels, and you're always in between them every day. Jenny's working on a graphic novel that she's drawing on her phone that she sends me screenshots of, which I'm just blown away by. And I feel like you are, and this is also in between teaching people music. You just seem like you're one of the most inspired people I know. But despite this, you and I often discuss the insecurities of being an artist and a writer. And Mom, you often send me articles about writers having these same doubts and insecurities. And I think the only thing that makes me feel better about my own and my own writing practice day to day and my own lack of writing practice day to day is that so many other people are struggling. So just to feel like they're doing the right thing, or they know what they're saying, or they know where they're going with this, or they know what the outcome's going to be. And so even though you write more than anyone I know, Jenny, I know that we share these feelings of sometimes it can feel very insecure, I think, to be an artist, any kind of artist, from day to day. And I'm just wondering if this brings up anything in you you'd want to share.
Yeah, no, I want to just absolutely, yeah, first of all, thank you for bringing that up, because it's a huge part of I think anybody's creative process, no matter what your medium is. And something that I struggle with constantly is this question, not a question of do I want to do this? There's like, it's not optional. I have to do this. This is part of how I survive, part of how I express what I feel like life is about. But it's a constant struggle of, is there really a point to this? Is this turning into what I want it to? You know, I'm a big fan of parts work. And so I have an inner critic, and my inner critic can be so severe, can really say things to me like, is this marketable? Is this a marketable story? You know, how are you going to sell this? If it's not marketable, what's the point? And it can be very hard to have a relationship with the inner critic that feels productive instead of, you know, very crippling. And at times, like, it's not always easy. I'm not going to say, oh, every day I can, you know, every day I can get up and write. That's not the case. I definitely have struggled with rejection repeatedly. Though I published Under the Surface, which I self-published, I have also queried 7 of my novels to literary agents, and I have not succeeded in getting an agent. And for years and years, I have been doing this. I've sent probably over 500 queries. This is probably maybe something I shouldn't be saying publicly, but to be honest.
No, by all means, you should.
Yes, I feel like it needs to be said out loud, because I do often feel I go between having the inner critic saying, you know, is it marketable? Is there a point? And then I have this other part of myself that's raging at the world and the publishing industry as I see it. And both of those parts, they belong, obviously. They're part of the mix, but like, they don't help the process. And yeah, it can be a dance, like a real balance, that trying to cultivate a healthy relationship with those darker parts of my inner self. Hey,
let me add a quote that Suzanne has pulled out here. So asking a working writer what he thinks about critics is like asking a lamppost how it feels about dogs, by Christopher Hampton.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, two thoughts come up. One is that a lot of our favorite artists were never discovered until another lifetime. Not that that doesn't make me feel better. I'm sure that doesn't make you feel better. But these are some of our very favorite artists that have created art and music and writing and books that all of us love. That's kind of a common thing. But that being said, I do think, knowing your writing and knowing you, Jenny, I often tell you that you are bound for success. I have watched friends now that are artists in different fields, you know, visual performing arts, and I've noticed there's two classes. You know, all my friends are talented, but some of them just give up. And then they're not an artist anymore. Then they move on to something safer, because you know what? It's not safe to be a writer or an opera singer or an actor or a visual artist. It's not a safe choice. There are things we can do in those professions to make a living. You teach, you inspire. That's one of them. You're doing the right thing. But there's no guarantees. And I just feel that it's those who are driven, who keep going, no matter how many no's they get, are the ones that succeed. They're not better than the others. They just kept going. And I think it's crazy also that Jenny doesn't have an agent yet, because these books are incredible. Again, if you're just tuning in, Under the Surface can be ordered on Amazon.com. Jenny's wildly shocking. It's inspired by ancient Irish mythology, but it's racy and has one of the most shocking scenes I've ever read in any book ever. You'll have to read it and you'll know exactly, my parents are laughing because they read it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But this is the kind of stuff people want to read. And when I pass your book on to, it ranges from my mom here on the phone to my niece who's 20 years old to my friend who is an oyster farmer in Maine. Everyone loves this book. Jenny is wildly talented, yet the path for artists to get their work made is not easy. I'm in that same boat with Jenny right now. I recently spent years on a script that I was so excited when it was bought to be made into a TV show, and then spent another couple years developing 10 episodes of a TV show before one a media conglomerate bought the other one, Fox to Disney or Disney to Fox. What's the difference? And guess what? They no longer wanted serious limited series anymore on this channel. So I am now putting it back into a movie. And having had one movie that came out before, didn't protect me against that roadblock. So there is really no protections in place. And I feel like I should take a moment to say that's why many writers are on strike right now. I am in the Writers Guild, and we are on strike. We aren't allowed to make any deals or accept any money to develop work. So a lot of people are feeling this, that even once you get that first big success, there is no guarantee. And so what can you do? You have, like you said, Jenny, an undeniable urge to make art. You can't help it. There's no other way for you. You have to, or you give up. And what I see in Jenny every day as a mother at home in the woods with a toddler in the deep snow running a picturesque Instagram-worthy home is that she's also cranking out novels every few months. So if there's anyone that deserves the recognition, it's you. I know you've written the sequel for Under the Surface, which I'm not sure you're publishing just yet, but you've also been working on several other projects. Would you like to tell us about any of them?
Yeah. I am currently working on a novel that is a contemporary romance, but it is exploring the friendship of two women who met when they were teenagers. And each of them is trying to break free from the expectations of society and find her true creative voice. So these two friends are one of them is a writer and one of them is an artist. And this book for me is exploring really how important friendship has become to me during the pandemic and during motherhood as well. Even being so isolated, I found that somehow it made me get closer to friends because I had to try harder. The book that I'm currently, it's finished and I'm polishing it and getting ready to send it out there to more agents.
Well, I would say, Jenny, that I've read your book and it was beautifully written. It wasn't just the plot. It wasn't just the characters. They were sparkling, wonderful, but it was the feel of the book. You really felt immersed. And when you described the sea as being cold, it made me cold to read it. Your descriptions were so apt. And it was like one enters a different world. And I just want you writers to know that one anonymous writer said, if Moses were alive today, he'd come down from the mountain with the Ten Commandments and spend the next 5 years trying to get them published.
It's true.
And so yeah. I think that's all just part of it. Paulo Coelho said that writing is a socially acceptable form of getting naked in public. You have to be brave to be a writer, and I really respect that you all are willing to take that risk, as all the writers in our lives have. And the literature of the centuries is something that our entire civilization treasures. And so thank you for being a part of that. And that led me to one other question I had, Jenny. When you were talking about writing during your mornings and you put on your music, and just for the sake of other writers who might be out there, I thought it was interesting your phrase, chasing the story. It's almost as if the story was there and you're just trying to capture it and write it down rather than the laborious work of making plot point after plot point. It's almost as if you had it there and that you're just writing it down.
Yeah, I think stories come to me as a feeling. You know, when you're like falling asleep at night and your mind is somewhere halfway between being awake and being asleep, and you start to, I don't know, see an image or you get this like a snippet of a song in your head, and it just gives you this feeling that is almost indescribable. But then you got to try to describe it, and that's the writing part. And sometimes that feeling can arrive fully, you know, fully formed as an image or a relationship. And I mean, for me, obviously, I think I like writing about relationships. That's in all my books. It's always about a relationship, whether it's between friends or a mother and a son or two lovers. I think that these relationships kind of arrive in my mind, And it does feel like they're already fully formed, and I'm sniffing them out and trying to just write down what I find, basically. That's how it feels to me.
Well, you also often say something. Sorry, Dad, go ahead.
No, dear, go ahead.
I was going to say, I often tell Jenny I'm frustrated that I am not feeling so productive. I am not like Jenny in that I put on my playlist and it comes rushing to me. I'm more like put on my music and, you know, wish for chains to tie me down. But Jenny often tells me, you're writing, you're doing the work even when you're not writing. And while I don't know if that's true and I don't always feel like I am, she makes me feel okay about the days and weeks and months that ideas aren't flowing because she's right. Oftentimes we take a step back and then when we return, we were ready. In screenwriting school, I had a professor who would always say, write your first draft and then put it in a drawer and close it up for a month and then open it back up and you'll see it with fresh eyes and you'll be ready to finish it. And Jenny, I feel like I've gotten my first time just in the past few weeks to say this to you, because you've always written your 3 hours a day. Jenny's at a point where she's soaking in a whole draft, and I'm reminding her of the advice she gives to me. Jenny, when you're away from it, when you're walking in the woods singing your beautiful ancient opera songs to your children and the animals that surround you, you're still going further in your story. But Jenny's mind is always working on a story. And you tell me that when you're doing the dishes or when you're putting down your kid for bed, that you are your mind stays on the last scene you were working on. And you keep working it so you come up with what happens next. Is this correct?
Yeah, that's true. And it often feels to me like a movie. So this is kind of throwing it back to you. It feels often like I'm looking at the scene, I'm looking at the characters and hearing what they have to say. And I find that's something that it's like a thing that just keeps me going through the grind of life, I guess, doing the things that, you know, maybe are not as exciting. And of course, you know, there's part of me that, you know, I practice mindfulness as well. So I'm like, you should really, you know, wash that dish, be very present. But let's face it, like sometimes, especially as a mom and a stay-at-home mom, the domestic grind is something, I just want to escape.
What better way to escape?
Totally, yeah. I mean, and also, another thing about these stories that I think is helpful and also like very healthy for anybody out there, even if you've never written before, it can be a way to live these unlived lives that you've thought about living, or to experience things that you might never get to experience, but you don't want to actually experience, but might like to think about. And that's kind of a fun thing about writing as well, is it's a way to explore your own inner reality and to make it feel like just a little bit more real by writing it down.
Yeah, that reminds me of in my ongoing writing crisis, a few weeks ago, I reached out to a therapist that specializes in working with writers who are having creative issues. He was a screenwriter in Hollywood, and now he's a crime thriller novelist, mystery novelist. And he said, when we talked, well, I write because I have to write all the, I would be one of these crazy people you read about in the news doing, I can't even say the words here. It's actually too topical to the kind of thing we see in the news every day. It feels too triggering. But to the kind of violent things you read in the news, I would be afraid I'd be one of those people if I weren't writing that into my books. And I feel like that's something, it's not just about violence, but about being an artist, about being a writer specifically, that allows you to explore emotions, scenarios, thoughts that may be taboo either to society at large or in your life, in a safe space. And that actually seems really healthy mentally, I would say. Wouldn't you, Dad?
I think so. I think it's very therapeutic.
And I think, too, one of the things you all mentioned was about connectivity and writing about relationships And Jenny, we've had psychologists on just recently talking about the most central thing in life for all people's happiness or well-being is good relationships and connectivity. So what you're doing, girls, is being able to let people connect to fantasies, to things that they might not experience, but you can experience vicariously through this wonderful writing. So I think it's very sound psychology.
That also brings me to connectivity. I feel like it is so important when you're a writer to have another writer friend or a writer's group or a writer community. It could come in the form of a friend or a mentor or a class or even a podcast where you're listening to writers talk or, you know, going to school for it. You could find it in any of these different ways. But I feel like it is so hard for people to understand the kind of specific stressors of being a writer, of all these things we're talking about. And I don't know, having you to talk about it with Jenny on days where I feel like I might give up, you see what I'm feeling exasperated about and you turn it into a positive or something useful to me to consider for the next day in writing. And I just feel that everyone who wants to write should find some kind of community. Do you?
For sure. Yes, and you do the same thing for me, obviously. You do the same thing for me so many times, I can't even count. Yeah, I think that it's so hard to live in a vacuum. I mean, on one hand, yes, writing, you can almost write your own imaginary friends. So, you know, I guess you could. It's better than not having a creative outlet, but sharing it really helps, even if it is, as we do, we mostly share talking about our process, talking about what it feels like emotionally to be working through a story. I also have several friends who I share my writing with as beta readers. I have a few friends who are professional editors. I also, during the pandemic, started a book club, like a virtual book club. And part of it, to be fair, was me wanting to do marketing research, essentially, with my friends. I selected a group of people I admire, and we voted on books, and it was so incredible to hear these people talk about the books. And I learned a lot about how people read, why they read, and what it is that makes people think a book is good or bad, people other than me. And so that was actually really helpful too. And I would recommend that for any writer to be in a book club that reads books that are relevant to the kind of stuff you want to write. Yeah.
That brings me so critical to another question, because when one writes, you're open to criticism. So I was wondering, whenever you write a book and submit it, you will have critics. How do you all shore yourself up or deal with the critics that come along for your writing?
Elizabeth, what do you want to say about that first? And then
I will say that sharing your work with anyone, with friends, with the writer's group first, and getting used to hearing feedback really helps prepare you. I would say the number one function of me going to film school was taking screenwriting classes and hearing all the bad, stupid, annoying, unuseful feedback that made me furious. Because you know what? It wasn't long before it didn't make me so furious, and I had a good sense of humor about it, and I started a little system in my brain that if you hear the same note from several people, that maybe it's something to pay attention to. That if someone gave a note that really was stupid, they probably just didn't get what you're talking about, and you don't have to worry about them. Big deal. It's not for them. And it can also be really encouraging. But it's good to get a little bit of a thick skin, because you know what? We were also talking about marketing, and I was thinking about how I feel like you're told by your writing mentors, it's so hard not to do it, but to never think of what people will want to buy, because there's no way of predicting the market. And agents try to predict the market, what audiences will like. And I feel like they're surprised again and again, which is probably why the movie that won the Oscar this year, Everything Everywhere All at Once, could anyone have predicted that that's what everyone all over the world would want to watch? No way. And so as difficult as it is, I feel like we have to put the guessing what people are going to think about our work, and then on the flip side, what they actually thought of it, out of our heads. Because I think it's just too painful to make yourself that vulnerable with art and then let it actually get to you. Your mind should, I think the best place to be is that your mind has already moved on to the next project by the time people have criticisms. You know, the morning after Sundance, my first review from the head critic at Variety, who had given me 10 directors to watch a week before, gave me this scathing review that was actually so hateful. It was shocking. It was kind of anti-feminist. And I think that had the film come out a few years later, it would have been a real Me Too kind of situation. And as disappointing as that was to receive, you know, I think Mom and Dad, you called me, you got your first review. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. I'm glad that they weren't all like that. And in fact, someone saying such strong words about my story, which is a rather, you know, charged story, inspired a lot of other writers to retaliate against him and made other people write articles about my movie that may not have existed otherwise than to discuss why would this male critic have such a despicable response to a storyline in the film. And so it's interesting how even something that is, you know, a bad response, critical response, can actually lead to more attention. You know, who was it that said all press is good press? Fine. And I think you just have to get your skin tough enough. And usually by the time something comes out, it truly has been so chewed and chewed and regurgitated and chewed that it is now sitting across the room and you have moved on in some way. That doesn't mean you don't feel it. You know, we all have feelings. But I think just trying to work on having a thick skin and keeping your nose to the grindstone and making work you care about and that you feel good about, like you say, Jenny, writing something that you want to read, writing something for yourself that you feel good about. What more can you do than that? Because you have no idea what people are going to like.
That's true. And I think that that is really the only, that has to be kind of your North Star, is writing what you want to read or a movie you want to see. And like you're talking about, when you're receiving maybe beta critics, et cetera, that type of thing. Yeah, when two people say the same thing, it is something to listen to. But also, I think when somebody says something to you about your work that really gets under your skin, that's a signal too, to me, sometimes, maybe not even about the writing itself, but maybe about me and my relationship with myself, which I think, you know, is just a... that even goes beyond the world of writing. You know, when someone gets under your skin, it probably is more about you than them. Something that you, the reason they're getting under your skin is maybe because of some, you know, part of your relationship with your own self that might need nurturing. Because ultimately, if someone is saying something, you know, unjustified or unkind, then that's on them. But yeah, I think criticism and receiving feedback as a writer, it is challenging, even if it's not, you know, you've been published. Like, and I, you know, when I go and read my Goodreads reviews, there are some that obviously are positive, and then there are some that are really negative. And when I read one that's negative, ultimately at this point, I just think, you know, they didn't get it. They didn't get it. And that's okay. Not everyone is going to get it. And I also feel, and this is something you and I have talked about, if your work isn't pissing somebody off, it's probably, you're not doing it right. You've got to piss somebody off. You have to.
Yeah, be too boring.
This writer called Kingsley Amis said, a bad review may spoil your breakfast, but you shouldn't allow it to spoil your lunch, too.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, move on.
Hey,
yeah.
John Steinbeck had a good saying, too. He said, unless a reviewer has the courage to give you unqualified praise, I say ignore the bastard.
There you go. Yeah, also what kind of job is it to just criticize other people's work? Seems like a crap job to me.
By the way, how do your partners deal with all your writing and the frustrations thereof?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how much I think that I think maybe I'll speak for both of us, saying where we are, our work, how we're feeling about it can affect our moods and therefore our relationships and home life. I think Jenny's done a better job than I have, and I'm aspiring to try this and making a daily practice that no matter what happens, and I'm the first to let anything else get in the way. And I'm trying Jenny's tactic now. Every morning, 9 to 12, don't do anything else. And then other things that may come up in the day won't bother you as much because you got your time done and you don't feel like everyone else is infringing upon your work.
So because, true. Yeah, mm-hmm, so true.
You're good at that. You're good at that.
Well, I have times when I am actually lately, like in the past month, I haven't been as good at that. But, and it shows. And yeah, I mean, no, relationships are, it is hard because also my husband works from home and our house, he also does a lot of writing. He's a scientist. So he writes and publishes scientific papers. And on one hand, he totally gets it. He gets the writing process. And Elizabeth, also your husband is a writer. So they get it. But also, you know, each writer is a completely different beast. Like you're a totally unique creature, and every single book or movie you're writing is its own entity as well. And it's, I mean, I don't know if you feel this, but every time you're writing, it is like reinventing the wheel. Every single project is a reinvention of the wheel. And sometimes, yeah, it can be hard to negotiate partnership with that. But I think the thing that I find is a balance is so important. Just finding a good balance of, you know, time for your creativity and time for the other life stuff.
Thank you, Jenny. That balance is so elusive. That balance is so elusive and delicate and ever-changing.
And I had one more question. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I was wondering about revisions when you have to go back. I know Stephen King, a big writer that we all know, said revising a story down to the bare essentials is always a little like murdering children, but it must be done. So how do you all go back through and clarify and enlighten your script after it's all written?
Well, definitely what Elizabeth was talking about is you have to put it away. And that is something Stephen King talks about in his memoir on writing. You have to put it away for some amount of time and maybe work on something else in the interim, or just, you know, live your life. And having that perspective is so important. And for me, I also think it really helps to try to read it with fresh eyes and to create some separation. It to either print it out or even at minimum put it into a different font than you wrote it in. And believe it or not, that can just make such a shift visually into how you're receiving it, or put it onto your phone and read it on your phone. So those are things.
The font. That's an awesome idea.
It really works. It's wild. Yeah, so that's those are two revision things that I do. And I also feel it's really important to give your work to other people and get their feedback. And then the whole process of filtering their feedback is its own thing. But yeah, it's, you have to do it. And I agree. You have to kill your darlings. You absolutely have to.
These are bona fide writing tips for you out there considering writing. And as we're getting closer to the end of the show, I wanted to ask you both, there aspiring young and older writers out there, would you recommend to them to go ahead and try? What, you know, is it going to be worth their time? What would you tell a young person or anybody who wants to write? Should they go ahead and try?
No, I'm kidding.
Yes.
And how would they start? How, give them a nutshell of how they would start.
You know, you go first.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I think you can start, even so small. You can even start on social media. You could even start creating a story in the smallest way. But there are, you know, depending if you want to share or not, I think it's really put together, you know, a series of even images that you just write down. Make it a note on your phone. It doesn't have to be, you know, if a big white page on your computer is scary, you can start it texting yourself even. I do that. I write sometimes just in text messages to myself. If that's nothing, if nothing else, that counts.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are coming to me and asking, you know, how do I make a movie? They have an idea for a movie. And I often say, write it down like you were telling a friend, like this story. Like, how would you just describe the story? Like, just try to get the words down on the page. And if that feels too daunting, what if you made a list of everything you know happens in the story? Anything that you know that you want to happen, put it in the list. And once you have a list, it'll be really easy to see where something is missing or where you could elaborate. And there's just so many rich resources. I know for screenwriting, I've Scripts Notes podcast with John August. And Jenny, what do you like, any writing podcasts?
I actually don't really listen to any writing podcasts. I listen more to like mothering podcasts at this point.
Well, okay. You just had, I feel like, you told me about Mary Carr, however, a book about writing memoirs. Oh, she's giving me a face like she didn't. We're on video, guys. But, okay, Mary Carr has a book about writing. But I just feel like there's so many resources. And even after all the school I've gone to for writing, I am so often Googling, how do I begin? Just to find someone who's done it many more times than me, giving me the inspiration of how to do it again.
Well, one thing, yeah, I would recommend for writers, there's a website called CritiqueCircle.com. And when I was first starting to write, I used it a lot. And it's a forum for writers. And you can just post your stuff and critique each other. And it's incredible. You will learn so much even just from reading other people's critiques of somebody else. And that's I really recommend that as well. That's a good way to get started if you're ready to share.
And there's probably no better feeling on earth than having finished a draft that you feel good about. I don't know that there's any better feeling than looking at this manuscript on the desk that was me hitting the desk and saying, I did that. And it is just such a feeling of, I'd say the biggest moment of success comes for me, even before anyone else ever reads it and gives me their thoughts. That pure moment that you've created something that took that much time and effort and you followed it through is just irreplaceable.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Although I am just like so always so hungry for sharing. For me, it's like when one single friend reads my book and I feel like I've shown somebody this doorway into a world that was completely internal for so long. That's always just kind of this like wild moment for me to be like, wow, this friend, this even one person knows about this whole world that I have spent maybe a year or two even, depending, living in. Now they know too. Wow.
And thank you for sharing that world with us, Jenny. Everyone should get her book. I still feel a part of that world under the sea and on the island. It was beautifully done. And Arliss, are we about finished with the evening?
We are. Can each of you give us a closing sentence?
Find a friend to talk to about what you hope to create. It will help your process and inspiration so much just to be heard by one person.
I agree. Creating and sharing it with a friend is probably one of the greatest joys of life for me.
And we'd like to say Gallatin Valley, listen well, begin writing if you want to, use the resources these writers have told us about. Continue to tune in each Monday and Thursday mornings for Health and Happiness, KGVM 95.9, KGVM.org.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, dears.